It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
We're back live with more of Anthony Herron and Gabe Ramirez on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Williams to Drummond. Cross-court DeRozan left wing against Martin. Swings it through him, draws the contact all the way to the top, and he jammed it in with a right-handed hammer and a chance at a three-point play. DeMar DeRozan turning back the clock with another dunk and dunk. The Bulls run on Duncan, and they've got a chance at the line.
Adam Amin with the call right there, and might have been the last time he says DeMar DeRozan's name and cheers for him as a member of the Chicago Bulls. Why don't you play your intro again, Sean?
You're gonna use that. I ain't even talking about you. Shut up.
That's the clip. That should be your outro clip at the very end of every show. And got to get it up to Sean Sears. I ain't even talking to you. Shut up. Oh, my bad, Sean. All right. Of course, it is Gabe Ramirez, Anthony Herron. We're going to check in with Mark Grody and Alyssa Bergamini in just a second as they are broadcasting live from the Advocate Center, hoping and waiting the Chicago Bulls. Somebody comes downstairs with a piece of paper and says, we made the trade. Because then we get firsthand insight right there with those two. But, of course, the Bulls draft pick, their original one, is the 11th pick, and it belongs to the Orlando Magic. That one's happening in just a little bit. We'll get an opportunity to see what could have been. But are they there? Are they ready to roll? Oh, man, let's bring them on early.
We're ready to roll.
Oh, this is the duo we've been waiting for. Mark Grody, Alyssa Bergamini. Let me guess. You guys are sipping on. Let me see. Mark Grody's drinking Diet Coke. Alyssa Bergamini. You just got a bottle of water.
I have the large Stanley.
Yeah.
I already finished an iced coffee from Starbucks, and people are bringing Mark coffee. Mm-hmm. No one's offered to bring me coffee, just him. So.
Uh-oh.
It's Mark Grody. It's Mark Grody.
That's because I know all the OGs out here. You know what I mean? Like, David Schuster just walked past our site, and I just said, hey, can you grab me a cup of coffee? Next thing I know, there was a cup of coffee in front of me.
Hey, kid.
Yeah, man. It's pretty. Yeah, hey, kid. Exactly. I'm like the young guy with the OGs out here.
What's the spread though, man? I mean, are you snacking on anything? Yeah, is there real food to be consumed?
There's some sandwiches. Yeah, there's some sandwiches. There's chips. Obviously, drinks. But Alyssa and I were just talking about this earlier in terms of eating strategy for reporters. Alyssa, like me, I like to, at the end of the night, go home after whatever I'm doing work-wise, whether I'm hosting with Gabe or out here with Bergamini and Porth. When the work is all done, then I go home, get comfortable, and eat.
You reward yourself when you're at home. And I'm on the same wavelength as Mark is. I don't really eat much before, but when you go home, that's when the diet starts to just
go. A whole large pizza.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you can see that 40 pounds on me right now, if you would like. But you guys were talking about, we were listening a little bit to you guys, and you guys were saying, you know, let's see the body language that they're reading now. Interestingly enough, and we talked about this earlier, Arturis Karnišovas and Mark Eversley did come down here, and there was a big circle of reporters, and they were just kind of having an off the record, so to speak, conversation. But we were just told too by somebody who's been covering the Bulls for a long, long, long time that's the most time that he has spent with Arturis Karnišovas. So in other words, what we saw develop in front of us was not expected, and it was interesting. And I know people online have read into the picture, Alyssa, that you put up, but should we be, with that information we learned, should we be reading into the casual nature of the Bulls bosses being that sort of off the record, or is it a good thing or a bad thing that they were down here?
That means that absolutely nothing is happening.
Well, right, that's what we were thinking, Gabe, that could that, if they're that casual and Arturis Karnišovas is doing something unprecedented with at least one of the reporters here, could that be a sign, Alyssa, that maybe it is going to be the night that we expected it to be here?
Right, and this is my first season covering the draft, so when I saw them come down here, I just thought that was common. natural.
Right. Yeah,
natural
like
to come down and talk. Yeah. But now we're hearing that is a rarity.
Alyssa, it's like, you know, oh, he has the Indiana Pacers and the Dallas Mavericks on line 1 and 3, but he's like,
yes,
you know what, Casey Johnson, I really like you. I'm gonna talk to you a lot right now.
I will say that if something does go down, that's pretty smooth.
He did seem relaxed.
Yeah, on the part of Karnišovas and Eversley, if something was going down while that was happening, that would be very impressive. But Alyssa brought up another good thing and reminded me of, quite frankly, I don't know how you guys felt at the trade deadline, but Alyssa, kind of a similar feeling.
I was saying similar feeling back in February when everyone wanted the Bulls to make some type of move, some type of trade. It was the Bulls and the Cleveland Cavaliers, the only two teams that did not make a move back then. So the inactivity, it is feeling similar once again. And you can just tell that media members, you know, it's the same thing. We're all just kind of waiting, as you mentioned earlier, Mark. It is the long game here. So feels the same.
Absolutely. You guys played that clip of DeMar DeRozan. Are you guys anticipating? I mean, it sounds like you guys are being pretty dramatic back there. Are you anticipating that DeMar DeRozan is gone before the night is over or before the 2024 season starts?
Grody, you know me, and I am easily excitable. And so I just asked Sean Sears to just give me a highlight. Make me feel good about the Bulls.
And
highlights make me feel good. I like Justin Fields highlights. I like DeMar DeRozan highlights. Hell. Right now, throw me a Zach LaVine dunk. I don't even care. No, just play.
I ain't even talking about you. Shut up.
Is there somebody there at the Advocate Center as you're interacting with all the different, you know, collective media there, just waiting to see if the Bulls are going to do something, not expecting the Bulls to do anything? But is there somebody with like the hottest of takes? Is there anybody rolling around there who's like completely against the grain?
Not to toot our own horn here. We're the only ones on the mic right now talking, doing some work.
Live and local, baby.
Computers, but I mean, really, everyone is just hanging out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sugarcoat it. That's what's happening.
Right. Right now, it seems like a pretty hot conversation going on between Sam Smith, Chuck Swirsky, and Cheryl Ray. We've got David Schuster looking at. He just took a bite out of a sandwich. He's sitting across from the great Julia Poe, who of the Chicago Tribune.
Chris Bowden in the house.
Chris Bowden, one of the best TV reporters in town. You've got Casey Johnson over here sitting across from the international media. So it's really that's the scene out here. Everybody's just kind of in their own areas. We're looking at, too, the setup for one. And I should point out, too, to our listeners that Arturas Karnišovas and I believe Mark Eversley and Billy Donovan will all be down here later on. They've got two mics set up right now on the table. So once this thing is all over, we will talk to those guys, and that actually will air live on Chuck Swirsky's show, which goes from, 9 to midnight?
Ten to midnight.
Okay.
I do have to mention that...
Porth just looked at me like I'm an idiot.
We're having fun. Darnell Mayberry, did leave the room because he got a phone call. So maybe
maybe he left.
I did notice.
Maybe, yes. Alyssa, maybe he left because the number 10 pick, the Dallas Mavericks, just traded it to the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yes.
Kaysen Wallace was just drafted from University of Kentucky. But the Bulls pick is next, or the Bulls, what used to be the Bulls pick, is up next, the number 11 pick.
I wish they had a pick next.
For the Orlando Magic. And there are two guys that are still available that really could have helped the Bulls. Grady Dick, a nice sharp shooter from Kansas. And then your guy, Cam Whitmore. Grody, I know that's somebody that you really liked, right?
Oh, yeah. No, people have been texting me about Cam Whitmore and what could have been with the Bulls. I like that we're at the point where we're doing the what would the Bulls have done had they been picking with number 16 overall. So, yeah, that's a good – a lot of people have hit me up on Whitmore.
All right, guys. Go eat your sandwiches and chips and water and Diet Cokes. We'll be waiting here for
– How are you guys doing? How's it going back in the studio?
I mean, we're hanging in there. You know, we were trying to hold out hope that maybe something wild was going to happen. Nothing wild happened at number 3. So now my disappointment level has been sort of ramping up a bit since that 3rd pick just went as advertised.
I thought for sure we were going to be talking about something major, you know, and then you know what it's going to happen. It's going to happen at 9:59 when Chuck gets on the air.
Right. Okay. Exactly.
I actually, you know, Chuck really deserves that. So let's hope.
Fair.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
That would be his dream.
Mark Carman just walked in a little while ago from CHGO. Rick Gregg from Rick Gregg, that's your former roommate, right, Gabe?
Rick Gregg and I used to room together back in the day. Yeah. Rick Gregg from WBBM AM, our sister station.
Uh-huh.
Good dude. Tell him I said what up when you see him.
I will. Yeah, he's over yonder right now, but I'll definitely, when I see him again, I will definitely tell him that, and I will look forward to talking to you guys a little bit later on, as will Alyssa Bergamini.
I'm assuming, Alyssa, you're going to give Karma a go Hawks at some point when you cross paths?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to wait till the end of the... end of the show. How's that?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It's not like gang banging. You guys can talk. You guys can still be friends. You guys are not on
East side, West side. Yeah. All right.
Car moves in mysterious ways. You never know. Like, he'll probably get up and leave for another hour or something. Actually, knowing Car, he probably will start shooting some hoops down here. You know what's really tantalizing, guys? There's a full court that's available, and there are basketballs galore here. You guys know what I'm saying?
Is anyone shooting?
Nobody's playing right now.
No, but there's literally like 30 basketballs in here on the racks. And so
this is why I'm not there, Groats, because then it'd be like this guy, and I would be that guy. There's no doubt.
Who would be the first pick of the assembled Chicago media if a game broke out right now? I'm saying that at the Advocate Center, at the Advocate Center right now. Yes, who would be the first pick?
I mean, Casey Johnson, he is the tallest.
Ooh, that's a great question, Big Ant. I love this. Yeah, yeah. And Casey played college basketball, Division III, but he played. Actually, I've heard that.
Subtle shade.
Shady Grody.
Shady Grody. I'll accept that. David Schuster, I've been told, is a very good shooter.
Schuster got some game?
Okay. He's got some game. I bet Dion Miller. We didn't even mention her. Dion Miller in the house.
I bet she's a point guard.
Hey, does Cassie Carlson have game? Because she was here a little bit earlier. I bet she could play a little bit of
hoops. She looks like she should have game, but from what I understand, no.
I didn't want to be shady.
Really?
Yeah,
right.
I was like, Cassie, she's a good coach. I don't have game either,
so I'm not even.
Oh, Alyssa, you were going to be my first.
Pick me.
But Cassie looks like a 7-footer when she walks in the room, so there would be an assumption, but apparently, not so much.
That's tough in life when people assume that because you're tall, you play well, and then you don't.
Like,
what if that was the only reason when Wimbanyama went number one overall? He's 7'5". This guy's got a ball.
I vote you guys randomly start picking people. You just go and be like, Grody, I got first pick. I got Casey. And see if you can get a game started.
Please start an Advocate Center media draft.
That'd be so dope.
I want that to be in your next report.
You know what?
We'll make it happen.
It'll be there, and maybe, who knows, if I could get... I am going to actually dare Carm to take a... just to shoot a layup under the basket. If he does, I will get video of it.
And you know what? I'm sorry, before you guys go, there is one person who is the clear-cut favorite to be the number one pick over there, and it is Cody Westerlin.
He's walking right in front of us.
Cody, without question.
We're doing a little NBA media draft.
I didn't forget about him. He was going to be my next pick.
Cody, number one pick in the draft, without question.
Yeah.
He's a stud.
Oh, yeah. He's young. He's athletic. But he has been brought down by being a father. So,
and I know.
And he's 35 now.
Yeah, right.
He's brought down a level in his life. See you later.
All right, you two. See you guys later, Bulls. All right, that's Mark Grody, Alyssa Bergamini, giving us the best inside scoop from the Advocate Center, where the Media League is put together out there. I was going to say something about, because that's fun. That sounds fun.
Yeah. Like,
playing basketball out there.
I mean, who would stop them? If somebody went and grabbed a basketball right now
and just started
a game of 21.
But you would just be that guy.
Like, you'd be that guy, but I mean, like. Nobody's going to run out there and tell him not to.
That's why you need a Kevin Lapka, right? I feel like Kevin Lapka's the one that would go do it. For sure. Wouldn't even think about it. He'd show up in his like Jordan Bulls short shorts.
The Bulls aren't doing anything anyway. You're not going to miss anything. It'd be one thing if there's like all kind of action happening and Bulls are wheeling and dealing, making trades or whatever. Somebody just grabbed a ball and started up a game of 21. So what? So you're getting to play 21 at the Advocate Center while you're on the clock covering, air quotes, the Bulls in tonight's NBA draft. But the Bulls aren't doing anything.
At all. Sean, you any good at basketball, bro? Because you were kind of harsh over there when you were talking to Rediger.
I'm all right. I'm okay.
Ant and I know what that means.
Yeah. Okay. I'll play. Let's play. I'll play. I know you play with some of your guys.
You'd have zero chance.
Oh.
And I'm significantly older than you.
We got a Billy Hoyle situation going on right here. Y'all about to put some money on it?
Please. We could talk during the break, but you got no shot over there.
Okay. Hey, I mean, I got some handles. That's all I got to say.
Sean, bro, come on. What high school did you go to? Niles West?
No, Naperville North.
Naperville North. Jeez, come on. All right.
You got to laugh at his own high school. Damn, Naperville North.
I didn't make the team out there either. See, now I'm shady over here. All right. We get an opportunity to pivot We've been talking about the NBA draft as these picks are starting to come in. Jet Howard made the Atlanta pick. Could have been the Bulls.
Oh, that would be fun,
Could have been the Bulls.
That would have been fun if Jet Howard came to Chicago, man. But, his pop's hometown.
But check this out, though. The draft grade, he's the first C-minus of the draft grades from the first 11 picks.
Here's the thing, man. I mean, we can go to break. I can come back and give you a little Jet Howard breakdown. This first Big Ten guy to come off the board in the draft tonight. And I'm going to tell you, I'm not mad at it. I'm not mad at this pick.
Let's talk a little Jet Howard on the other side and then talk some Chicago Bears as well. Get Anthony's updated thoughts on what has been happening in the offseason for our Chicago team. We will do that. All on the other side. It's the NBA draft special sprinkled in with a little bit of Bears with Gabe Ramirez, Anthony Herron, right here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Shady!
We're back live with more of Anthony Herron and Gabe Ramirez on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
16-8, dribble drive, left angle, and DeMar DeRozan with a right-handed power dunk! Oh my goodness! DeMar DeRozan just ate some big time Bulls rim.
It was a mouthful nonetheless. Chuck Sorsky with the call right there. Of course, Bulls can be heard right here on 670 The Score. It is the NBA draft special. Gabe Ramirez, Anthony Herron, and Dallas Mavericks just made their pick. Derek Lively the second from Duke center. Best rim protector behind Wembanyama. And two premier shooters, two of the most elite shooters in the draft. Cam Whitmore, Grady Dick, both still available. And you just wonder, like, I wish I could talk to just quickly ask Grody and Alyssa Bergamini, like, is AK still in the room?
Right. Is he still, like, kind of lounging and chilling a little bit?
Because, and I'm sure you've probably made these preliminary calls to these teams that are in the teens to see if something can be done. But, like, look at the Warriors pick at 19. We heard last year so many rumors about them being interested in Alex Caruso. And you have Alex Caruso-type guys on your roster if you want them in an Ayo Dosunmu or a Pat Bev, like a defensive-minded kind of guard. Mm-hmm. But if you can swap that out for a sharp-shooting, you know, Cam Whitmore or Grady Dick, then maybe that's something that you might want to explore. So I just this is the moment that I would wish I'm going to text Grody and ask him, and ask him if AK is still in the room because I hope, you know, Cam Whitmore and Grady were projected to go in the top 12, top 13 picks, and they haven't been selected, so still available. And you would think, you know, I don't know.
I mean, the Bulls apparently have five Javantes, so, I mean, they could try one of them, right?
True. It's a great point. I do love Javante number four. He's pretty good. No, I'm sorry. But I would love the Bulls to be proactive in that situation, but unfortunately not. Somebody that did go in the 11th pick to the Orlando Magic, Jet Howard. Someone that you think highly of.
So if this would have been the Bulls pick, I'd have been excited about it, man, because you were talking about adding perimeter shooting. And Jet Howard, as much as, you know, like you're saying, he got like a C-minus grade or whatever, but for a guy who profiles as an exceptional shooter, you look at some of the games, like against my Iowa Hawkeyes, went off, man, from the perimeter, the ability to lengthen the game, not just from like the college three-point line, but several steps beyond the three-point line. And the thing is, his game seems to still be scratching the surface because he's 6'8", he's got handle, and he's got this perimeter jumper, and he's willing to do it like off the dribble. His game already has an NBA flair to it because he can play one-on-one. That was a lot of what Michigan's offense was this past season. But he was banged up a lot throughout the year. So even though he's got kind of a formidable, well-developed frame and he's got all kinds of length and he's got an exceptional perimeter jumper from extremely deep, but because he wasn't necessarily, you know, healthy throughout a lot of the year, so it actually allowed another Michigan player who's still on the board right now, Kobe Bufkin, ended up emerging really late in the season. And the thought was maybe Kobe Bufkin would end up being the first Big Ten player off the board tonight because he just that's part of why I asked Andy Katz about him. We had Andy on earlier in the show because Kobe Bufkin is likely going to be a first-round pick at some point tonight, but he wasn't the all-around talent that Jet Howard is. But when Jet Howard got banged up and wasn't playing much late in the year, that's when Kobe Bufkin became this guy who ascended up the kind of draft prognosticators' boards, and that was part of why he ended up deciding he's going to enter the draft here. But Jet Howard was the main guy with Hunter Dickinson on his team, with Kobe Bufkin on his team, guys who had predated him showing up at Michigan. But Jet Howard gets there playing for his father, of course. But it wasn't like Juwan just kind of force-fed the ball to Jet Howard. But when you watch his game, he's got handle. He's actually got some pretty good court vision too, but he wasn't tasked with being like the main ball handler for Michigan.
More of a catch-and-shoot guy.
Yeah, yeah, he's got a lot of that. But when you did watch him handle the ball, he's got a pretty comfortable handle also. So his game, to me, caters more to an NBA style of play.
Yeah.
And part of that probably just feels like, for obvious reasons, with his as long a playing career and then coaching career as his dad had at that level. So now he's a one-and-done guy going from Michigan to becoming a lottery pick. But I completely understand why Jet Howard, even though his productivity at Michigan was a little bit uneven at times, but yeah, you look at all the traits that are there, and he profiles to being a guy who, kind of like when Jordan Poole, actually, we were talking about the trade a little bit earlier, Chris Paul, essentially Chris Paul for Jordan Poole, so Chris Paul ends up with the Dubs, but Jordan Poole was a guy who left Michigan earlier than anticipated, really earlier than what maybe his college production would have said he should have left for.
Yeah.
But then he goes into a great situation in Golden State around a bunch of sharpshooters. He's like the fourth option and then gets paid after a few years there because in that sort of deferential role, he went off two seasons ago. Now he got the bag this last year, gets knocked out by Draymond, and now everything kind of falls apart for Jordan Poole this last season in Golden State. But, you know, kind of similar trajectory, I think, to what Jet Howard can become. I'll be really surprised if a few years from now, Jet Howard isn't getting a huge contract from somebody because he's got that kind of game.
6'8". 215.
If Jet Howard was a member of the Bulls, I think the city would have been going bonkers over this because of not only the tangible, like when you watch his film, a very exciting prospect because he can add what you were just talking about the Bulls could have used.
Sharpshooter.
They could use a sharpshooter, and that's definitively what he is, and he's long. He's not a great defender. He's a below-average defender. Can he pick that up? He's going to need to pick that element of his game up in the NBA, and I think he's got every potential to do that. So, man, if you know, just kind of thinking through the lens, because, you know, we don't have a lot of other things to talk about as it relates to the Bulls, but this could have been their pick instead of Orlando's pick. And if Jet Howard were going to the Bulls instead of the Magic right now, that would have been exciting news in Chicago.
Yeah. He's Anthony Herron. I'm Gabe Ramirez. This is 670 The Score. This is our NBA draft special. I've sprinkled in with a little bit more stuff as we head to 10 o'clock. Chuck Swirsky is going to jump on the air from 10 to midnight.
Chuck's gonna be disappointed because Chuck's a Michigan man, and he you know, if Jet Howard, you know, would have been coming here to Chicago, that would have been huge news for Chuck. And, you know, obviously Juwan Howard being a Chicago guy, his son, you know, the potential could have been there for his son coming to his city to play for the team he grew up rooting for and all that. So Chuck's probably going to be a little bit disappointed about that news. He may be listening right now. So, you know, if you're hurting right now, Chuck, we're here with you, brother. We feel you. Yeah.
He's going to be able to talk about it a ton. Again, 10 to midnight, he's going to be on the air. He's going to have a bunch of guests. Cody Westman is going to join him. He has a couple other surprises up his sleeve, so make sure you're here for that right here on 670 The Score. The NBA draft continues as the Toronto Raptors are making their selection currently. They have the number 13 pick in the draft. Of course, they might
there
be parting ways. Damn, Grady Dick just got picked. That's he fits their mold too, right? Like, they're going to be getting rid of, or not getting rid of, but they're going to part ways with Fred VanVleet. He's going to want a bigger payday. So they're going to try to retool their team. I mean, there was talks of Pascal Siakam being traded as well. Listen to this clip of Grady Dick, because if you're driving in your car, you have zero idea of what he's wearing. And it's like he's a red disco ball. I'll be very clear on that. And the craziest part about his outfit, this will be one that they'll be looking at in 10 years, Ant, when they're like, you know, what was the NBA draft style like in 2023? This is the one that they'll point to. But it's his shoulder pads. Like, it's one thing to have the double breast. Right, it's one thing to have the double breast suit. Okay, I'm here for it. That's in style. But your shoulder pads that are like 4 inches off
maybe
the edge
got
of your
broad shoulders.
Shoulders,
man.
No way, bro. But listen to Grady Dick as he was entering the NBA draft today.
So I'm from Kansas. Dorothy has her little slippers. I got my Dorothy suits. I don't know, red bottom. And then we got the logo. New logo, GD. Around a neck, around a neck. A little subtle, though. A little subtle hint.
There's a kid on TikTok or you know Instagram reels that he goes viral often. He's like a little chubby, little white kid with like glasses, acne, and he's always like, "You ever seen this kid, Sean?" Where he's like, "Uh huh, my drip's too swaggy."
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
My drip's too swaggy. He reminds me of Grady Dick right now. Okay. Yeah. But I will say this, Grady, good thing you didn't come to Chicago because you can't be wearing no GD chain around Chicago wherever you go.
Let's be very clear about that. Wouldn't have been the city for that.
When I heard him pull out things, I got the new logo GD, and I'm like, okay, good thing you're. Toronto, because nobody's gonna be tripping up about you.
Hard streets out in the six. Yeah,
Kansas, the rough spots out there in the K. But of course, Toronto Raptors taking Grady Dick. Cam Whitmore still out there. New Orleans Pelicans are on the clock right now. It was interesting to hear that they were considering moving on from Zion Williamson. With all the not only just from the drama, but it just seems like they want to move on. From whatever is the saga that is Zion Williamson. Before we get to that.
Somebody who's going to be on the court.
That's what I was going to say. That's ultimately what it is. Somebody that can contribute, especially because they're so close. They've done such a good job to bring guys like Brandon Ingram in there, CJ McCollum. They got JJ Alvarado, Jose Alvarado. So, they've done a good job in that sense. So if they would have had a guy like Zion Williamson, they probably could have made a deep run. I just want to go back for a second to Jet Howard.
Mm-hmm.
And ask you, because we as fans, we hear, oh, this is the son of a player, and Kobe's dad played in the NBA, teams like that. Does a team like the Orlando Magic look at a Jet Howard and say we would rather select you over a Grady Dick and a Cam Whitmore because of the pedigree? And like, what does the pedigree equate to?
Mm.
In terms of performance at a high level, is it because you might listen better, is it because you think that there's still space, like what does that do for you if you come from that sort of lineage that's played in the NFL or NBA?
It depends a little bit, because you think of Steph Curry, obviously son of Dell Curry, both parents athletes, and growing up in that environment, like you mentioned Kobe, you can grow up with a certain level of privilege that you don't necessarily have, what we would term as that dog in you,
right?
Because you haven't necessarily had to fight for something, wrestle
for
something.
People said that about Joakim Noah all the time.
Right. And so you worry about that a little bit, and you try to determine whether or not someone truly loves competition, is eager to prove themselves, and always, you're talking about maybe having a chip on your shoulder a little bit when we were talking about Scoot Henderson a little bit earlier. And so if you haven't been in a position where you necessarily need it, then it can be a little tougher to access that sometimes, because that hunger isn't necessarily ingrained in you, like Bane style. You weren't born in the dark like I was. You just kind of, I was born. It's different for certain guys. But the Mamba mentality, Kobe growing up with privilege didn't stop him from developing that competitive edge that you really want your great players to have. So for Jet Howard, I'm sure that was a part of what the pre-draft process was about, because he was a guy who, showed flashes at Michigan, but wasn't consistently that guy taking over games. But we did see it in doses. So are those doses enough just to say that he can maybe develop into that in the NBA? Was it only in doses because he doesn't necessarily, show himself as a guy who's always on edge,
right?
Always trying to be at his best, always trying to reach his peak, because he's never really needed to be that. Because when it comes down to it, whether you're talking, old school like boxers who kind of work their way up out of nothing, or soccer players internationally, baseball players, we think of historically these sports that kind of started off as events that like poor people would participate in, and that was their way out of poverty. And, to some extent, that's where a lot of great basketball players came from. And now it's become this global phenomenon. And now people of all different classes end up competing in it at a high level all around the planet. It's not what the sport began as, but that was what it used to be. And so I wonder, if Jet Howard was able to answer those questions. Is that a part of why Orlando felt good about taking him at number 11 when he was projected to be a guy who's maybe outside the lottery somewhere, despite the fact that he's got immense physical ability, and his game profiles at a very high level, but he was a little bit inconsistent, a little bit up and down throughout his one season at Michigan.
Yeah, it's a little different when they ask you what you're going to do with your first check, and typically they're like, buy my mom a crib. Mom already lives in a big mansion.
Yeah, right.
Mom's doing all right.
Yeah, my dad signed at the time the biggest contract in NBA history. We good.
I'm still on my mom's insurance, by the way. that's like what they're thinking right there. There is one prospect in particular that I feel like the Bulls should be looking at. And his name is Jordan Haber. Have you guys heard of this guy?
I have not.
Oh, see, I got. So he's at the draft right now. He's 21 years old. Okay. He's talked about how this is an opportunity of a lifetime. The funny thing is, he's never played basketball a day in his life.
Is this the law school's kid? Yeah.
Did you hear about this?
Yeah.
So there's a 21-year-old law student. He's 21 years old. He found a loophole to enter the NBA draft. So what started off as a joke and a bet, he said he made it with his friends and he would see if he could make it into the NBA draft. And he reached out to them and he hit all the check marks. You know, he's graduating from a accredited college. He, you know, was at least 19 years old. And so he reached out to the NBA and sure enough, they sent them over the paperwork. And bada bing, bada boom, filled it out. And now he's going to the NBA draft. Yeah. Isn't that crazy? Okay. So the big thing was, he says, so that his friends, all they wanted him to do was shake hands with Adam Silver. He's like, but no, I want to meet Wembanyama. I want to meet Scoot Henderson. Is this not the most ridiculous thing you've ever heard of in your life, bro?
Why did the NBA co-sign this?
Because
he was just some random dude?
Because I'm sure he's the only one, like anything else in life, like, they put these barriers in place because the assumption is that not everyone is going to do it. These NBA players aren't even doing it themselves. It's their lawyers and their agents or whatever that are doing it for them. So it's a finite amount of people that are going to be there. So when somebody else puts their name in that.
Probably boost that class GPA up too, right? That, like, draft class GPA.
Come on. Like, this is great. The NBA should be hiring him to represent them as part of their legal team.
It's going
to
be the next influencer. I kind of feel like that's what Sean was trying to do earlier when you were talking about hooping. He was like, yeah, I got game. Like, I feel like he was
trying to sneak into the NBA.
Sneak into the NBA draft. Just trying to show up at the Barclays Center and just be kind of a part of the hoopers.
He was trying to say that he can compete, but then he showed me his New Balance. Just like, Sean, bro, come on.
There's nothing wrong with New Balance. Kawhi's got New Balance.
New Balance.
Come on.
New Balance and cargo shorts. I was like, come on, Sean. You're not gonna hoop in cargo shorts, are you?
Maybe. Stretching.
I mean, I could if you wanted.
I'm sure you'd be balling, bro. I have no idea about it. But
he's got a lot of give, man. I could go. He's got a lot of places I could be on the court, you know?
All I know is this.
Versatile.
On Mondays after we hoop, every Monday, my shout out my 3-Room 2 crew. We go drink afterwards. So at least you'd be able to partake and have fun with us as we, you know, have some man time when we do that kind of thing every
Monday. I don't think Sean drinks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've had a beer a few times.
We'll find some commonalities. We know there's some
they got
stuff.
Soda pop there.
Oh, man. So, now we know you can't hoop. Call me soda pop. All right. We are going to take an opportunity to shift gears and talk about the Chicago Bears for the next little bit over here. We'll see if we can check back in with Mark Grody and Alyssa Bergamini if anything is happening there. Hopefully the Bulls can find their way into a better predicament than they are in currently. All right. It's Gabe Ramirez. It's Anthony Harris. Some Bears talk on the other side. Don't go anywhere. It's 670 The Score.
We're back live with more of Anthony Harris and Gabe Ramirez on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
No, I think it's been beneficial the second year because we can help have our players help with that. You know, so Justin, Mooney, Cole, all those guys can help. Justin Jones, they can all help with that culture. And, you know, teaching the guys what we are. And you bring guys in that love football and guys that care about their teammates. Natural like that was Maine. You know, he's TJ, all those guys that love the game, DJ. It's pretty easy, you know, to bring that culture along. And it's really about building the relationships with the guy next to you.
It's Coach Matt Eberflus talking about the Chicago Bears. You know, when teams bring up culture like that, and I mentioned this yesterday on the show, where I said it's an overstated thing, but it's very real. You know, there are guys that can change the locker room. There are coaches that operate in different manners. Some that yell, some that don't. You got guys that curse, guys that never would. And, you know, in your time playing in the NFL, I know you played for more than one team, mm-hmm. so you were able to experience, you know, different locker rooms. Is there something to be said about a culture, or can a culture only exist in a particular window for a team because it loses itself after being stagnant for such a long time?
When you begin to have success, when you begin to cut big checks and you have players who are with your organization for, you know, several years together, you kind of develop a little bit of a core, then you definitely develop a culture just based off the guys who are there for multiple seasons together. Now, not every culture is positive. You know, not every culture is beneficial. You think about, you know, the disappointment of the double doink that the Bears experienced after the Cody Parkey kick against the Eagles, and you still had the same core in place for multiple seasons beyond that, but there began to be a level of apathy that kind of started to set in, and injury and age and frustration with the quarterback and with everything and Matt Nagy. And so there was a culture that was in place, but it was a culture that almost that felt like, you know, felt like it had accomplished something that it didn't, because it was a crew that was in place that felt like, yeah, you know, we would have done something if not for Cody Parkey. And it was almost like, because there was no true postseason accomplishment with that squad, but then they almost started to kind of, you know, ride that wave as though they had done something big that year. They did win the division, but you didn't do anything in the postseason. And so there was a culture that was in place that felt like, you know, it began to get a bit apathetic. There wasn't that driving force that kind of kept them moving forward, that kept the team ascending beyond that 2018 season. And so culture definitely matters. You put a culture in place. And so that's a part of why, you know, you looked at last season, the Bears tried to get young, tried to get more athletic, also tried to get really workmanlike. And they hadn't really started to spend any money yet. They started to spend some money this year. Frankly, I'd comp it in a way to where the Cubs are kind of trying to steadily start to ascend a little bit. You know, they haven't gone out and got a Shohei Ohtani or anything yet, but they've started to spend some money. And I think the Bears are in the early stages of something along those lines as well, where they said, all right, this offseason, let's get a DJ Moore in here. Let's get some linebackers in here. Let's start to spend some money while still leaving ourselves some wiggle room and some cap space and some draft capital. And so there's a culture that they've begun to build here, but they have to be picky. It seems like they've been choosy about which guys they've brought in to add to that culture, because they do want to be careful about how they establish it.
Bears took the North in 2018, gave it right back.
Give it right back.
That was the big problem, yeah, right there.
It's unfortunate when that happens. You want to take the North and never give it back. It's really preferably you want to happen.
You
want to
borrow it.
They borrowed the North. That's a little different. That'd be a less effective podcast, the Borrow the North podcast.
Yeah, no, nobody's going to subscribe to that. No. Right, yeah. He's Anthony Heron. I'm Gabe Ramirez. This is 670 The Score. Let's stay in that culture zone for just a little bit. In your opinion, is culture sustainable then? Is a culture sustainable, or is it something that's ever changing based on the construct of the team? Because you mentioned, you know, guys getting paid and such, but, you know, you look at the New England Patriots, and the assumption there was that, you know, they've had a consistent culture for the tenure of Mr. Belichick.
Right.
But maybe, I'm sure it's probably morphed at certain moments, not by much, but morphed. But do you think, you know, outside of that, that's the outlier, right? Bill Belichick being there for so long, having control. Is a culture something that is a constant, or is it constantly changing?
Continuity matters with that. And I know, you know, we were speaking about it through the Bulls lens, through the basketball lens, where continuity was a bit more of a pejorative, a bit more of a negative. But when it's established and it's going well, that continuity can definitely put you in a position where an established culture can be sustained, can be maintained, and can be built upon. You know, and it's, you know, when it's head coach and quarterback, that's the easiest way to build it, to sustain it, to maintain it. Whether it was, you know, had a, you know, I was about to call him Bill Belichick. Before Mike Tomlin, the Steelers.
Oh my gosh.
We've been in basketball mode all night. Yeah. The only mustache is anywhere close to Dave Watson. Exactly. Everybody in the radio knows who we're talking about. We got basketball brain right
Sean,
now.
Sean, who are we talking about?
Bill Cowher. Yeah, so Bill Cowher to Mike Tomlin, but you have Ben Roethlisberger throughout that entire time. So the Steelers had an established culture for a long period of time there. To your point, obviously the New England Patriots had an established culture for a long period of time between Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. You know, Tony Dungy and Peyton Manning had an established culture for a long time in Indianapolis with the Colts. But even Ray Lewis was able to be, as a linebacker, he was the fulcrum of a Ravens culture for a number of years through multiple Super Bowls, a culture that was established around toughness, around intensity, around, you know, passionate locker room speeches and everything that feels like maybe it can wear a bit thin. But when you have a leader like Ray Lewis proved himself to be with that franchise, then you were able to sustain that for a long time. Now, to the question you're asking, though, like it did end up with Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson. There was a culture there in Seattle for a while that even with, you know, a variety of offensive coordinators, play callers, a lack of talent that surrounded Russell Wilson for certain stretches, they still had a culture that was able to be sustained there in Seattle for a while. It eventually fizzled, and Russ wanted out, and they moved on, and now he's in Denver. We'll see if he can establish a culture there with the Broncos. But, yes, they – the term culture, while it can be overused, it does have a level of importance, probably a level of importance in football that probably goes beyond its importance in any other sport, because the level of cohesion and coordination that's necessary for success in football goes beyond what's necessary for that level of success in any other sport. Like, you got to have a group that's in concert to really be effective in football. Now, it can happen in a one-off sort of way. Like, you know, maybe you get that brief window of time with the Rams when Kurt Warner was there and all the success that they had with the greatest show on turf for a very short period of time, or with this L.A. Rams Super Bowl that just happened, yeah, you know, a couple of seasons ago. But you think about what's happening in Kansas City right now. Like, they not only have the quarterback, but they also have the coach. And so there is a chemistry between quarterback, tight end, head coach slash play caller that seems like it's going to be sustained with the Chiefs for as long as they've got that core in place.
I asked the question, Ant, because, you know, what Eberflus and Ryan Poles were able to do that very first season, right? Evaluate, clean house, bring in some of their guys. And then you hear how the culture changed. The practices are run different. You know, Eberflus is a different dude. And I just, I'm always curious if that's sustainable, one, or if two, it is a culture that is trying to be instilled with a new team. Does that make sense? Like, you're trying to change a culture because it's a new team, so you need everybody to operate at a certain level in a certain way. It might not be what the end result will be, but, like, in a, for lack of better phrases, like, we got to whip these guys into shape and have everybody act it right. But that might not be the culture. That's just maybe the approach they had to take in order to get the team to be firing on all cylinders, or like you said, to have them in concert so that that way you can then, you know, pivot to a different culture of once it's identified. You know what I'm saying? Like, does that make sense? I'm fascinated by the culture aspect of the Bears specifically, because I'm curious if it's going to be one that's going to be the same with this current group, or if it's one that is needed in order to propel yourself to the next one.
Well, they're in the infancy of establishing it. And so I think for, you know, you think about the Jalen Carter draft pick, you know, and they could have taken him at number 9 there in the top 10. All the discussion that we had had for weeks leading into that period of time when, you know, we thought that there was a chance that the Bears are going to have a chance at him. They were going to have an opportunity to draft Jalen Carter, but would they be willing to do it? And a part of that concern was because you wonder if a player who seemed to obviously lack a level of maturity for everything we saw Jalen Carter experience going into the NFL draft, are the Bears in a position where they have a culture that's established enough, if they have veterans who are established enough to be able to nurture Jalen Carter, to keep him in line, to help urge him on, to be an example for him, all these different things that, you know, can try to have a player with a troubled past be able to step into to what you've built and grow from it and be better than what he's been off the field, not just on the field, but off the field, but frankly, both. You know, we were talking earlier about Brandon Miller, the immaturity that's shown there. And in the NBA, you can still find greatness within that, even if a player is going to show a lot of immaturity off the court, because the culture isn't as necessary for success in hoops as it is in football. Football, there's so many bodies, so many personalities, so much coordination that's necessary and choreography that's involved, where you do need guys to be on the same page, not just in their physical execution, but it takes so much of you to prepare for these games and for success that the culture that's established is far more important in football. It takes up a bigger percentage of what leads to success in football than it does in any other sport.
And it makes so much sense when you say it like that. You know, it's just a bigger group of guys.
Yeah.
And whether it's football or just, you know, school, whenever you have that many people that you have to kind of orchestrate, it's a difficult thing to do, especially if you're trying to get them to buy into a particular type of culture. We will continue to discuss the culture and the players of the Chicago Bears in the 9 o'clock hour. But at the top of the hour, we get a chance to reconnect with the dynamic duo, Mark Grody, Alyssa Bergamini.
They better have a hoops team. I know that.
They better have shot a layup. Because if not, what else are we doing there?
What are they doing?
What are we doing?
What else are they doing out there if they are not drafting a hoops team and shooting layups as we speak?
Well, the Lakers have about a minute left on their clock before they make their pick. So who knows? Maybe AK is making some magic happen. We'll talk to Alyssa Bergamini, Mark Grody on the other side to find out the latest from the Advocate Center. It's Gabe Ramirez. It's Anthony Herron. It's Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're back live with more of Anthony Herron and Gabe Ramirez on 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
No, I think it's been beneficial the second year because we can help have our players help with that. You know, so Justin, Mooney, Cole, all those guys can help. Justin Jones, they can all help with that culture and, you know, teaching the guys what we are. And you bring guys in that love football and guys that care about their teammates, natural like that was Maine. You know, he's TJ, all those guys that love the game, DJ. It's pretty easy, you know, to bring that culture along. And it's really about building the relationships with the guy next to you.
It's Coach Matt Eberflus talking about the Chicago Bears. You know, when teams bring up culture like that, and I mentioned this yesterday on the show, where I said it's an overstated thing, but it's very real. You know, there are guys that can change the locker room. There are coaches that operate in different manners. Some that yell, some that don't. You got guys that curse, guys that never would. And, you know, in your time playing in the NFL, I know you played for more than one team. Mm-hmm. So you were able to experience, you know, different locker rooms. Is there something to be said about a culture, or can a culture only exist in a particular window for a team because it loses itself after being stagnant for such a long time?
When you begin to have success, when you begin to cut big checks and you have players who are with your organization for, you know, several years together, you kind of develop a little bit of a core, then you definitely develop a culture just based off the guys who are there for multiple seasons together. Now, not every culture is positive. You know, not every culture is beneficial. You think about, you know, the disappointment of the double doink that the Bears experienced after the Cody Parkey kick against the Eagles, and you still had the same core in place for multiple seasons beyond that. But there began to be a level of apathy that kind of started to set in, and injury and age and frustration with the quarterback and with everything and Matt Nagy. And so there was a culture that was in place, but it was a culture that felt like it had accomplished something that it didn't, because it was a crew that was in place that felt like, yeah, you know, we would have done something if not for Cody Parkey. And it was almost like, because there was no true postseason accomplishment with that squad, but then they almost started to kind of, you know, ride that wave as though they had done something big that year. They did win the division, but you didn't do anything in the postseason. And so there was a culture that was in place that felt like, you know, it began to get a bit apathetic. There wasn't that driving force that kind of kept them moving forward, that kept the team ascending beyond that 2018 season. And so culture definitely matters. You put a culture in place, and so that's a part of why, you know, you looked at last season, the Bears tried to get young, tried to get more athletic, also tried to get really workmanlike. And they hadn't really started to spend any money yet. They started to spend some money this year. Frankly, I'd comp it in a way to where the Cubs are kind of trying to steadily start to ascend a little bit. You know, they haven't gone out and got a Shohei Ohtani or anything yet, but they've started to spend some money. And I think the Bears are in the early stages of something along those lines as well, where they said, all right, this offseason, let's get a DJ Moore in here. Let's get some linebackers in here. Let's start to spend some money while still leaving ourselves some wiggle room and some cap space and some draft capital. And so there's a culture that they've begun to build here, but they have to be picky. It seems like they've been choosy about which guys they've brought in to add to that culture because they do want to be careful about how they establish it.
Bears took the North in 2018, gave it right back.
Give it right back.
That was the big problem right there.
It's unfortunate when that happens. You want to take the North and never give it back. It's really preferably you want to happen.
You
want to
borrow it.
They borrowed the North. That's a little different. That'd be a less effective podcast, the Borrow the North podcast.
Yeah, no, nobody's going to subscribe to that. No. Right, yeah. He's Anthony Herron. I'm Gabe Ramirez. This is 670 The Score. Let's stay in that culture zone for just a little bit. In your opinion, is culture sustainable then? Is a culture sustainable, or is it something that's ever changing based on the construct of the team? Because you mentioned, you know, guys getting paid and such, but you know, you look at the New England Patriots and the assumption there was that, you know, they've had a consistent culture for the tenure of Mr. Belichick,
right?
But maybe I'm sure it's probably morphed at certain moments, not by much, but morphed. But do you think, you know, outside of that, that's the outlier, right? Bill Belichick being there for so long, having control. Is a culture something that is a constant, or is it constantly changing?
Continuity matters with that. And I know, you know, we were speaking about it through the Bulls lens, through the basketball lens, where continuity was a bit more of a pejorative, a bit more of a negative. But when it's established and it's going well, that continuity can definitely put you in a position where an established culture can be sustained, can be maintained, and can be built upon. You know, and it's, you know, when it's head coach and quarterback, that's the easiest way to build it, to sustain it, to maintain it, whether it was, you know, had a, you know, I was about to call him Bill Belichick. Before Mike Tomlin, the Steelers.
We've
been in basketball mode all night. Yeah. The only mustache is anywhere close to Dave Wansley. Exactly. Everybody in the radio knows who we're talking about. We got basketball brain right
Sean,
now.
Sean, who are we talking about?
Bill Cowher. So Bill Cowher to Mike Tomlin, but you have Ben Roethlisberger throughout that entire time. So the Steelers had an established culture for a long period of time there. To your point, obviously the New England Patriots had an established culture for a long period of time between Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. You know, Tony Dungy and Peyton Manning had an established culture for a long time in Indianapolis with the Colts. But even Ray Lewis was able to be, as a linebacker, he was the fulcrum of a Ravens culture for a number of years through multiple Super Bowls, a culture that was established around toughness, around intensity, around, you know, passionate locker room speeches and everything that feels like maybe it can wear a bit thin. But when you have a leader like Ray Lewis proved himself to be with that franchise, then you were able to sustain that for a long time. Now, to the question you're asking, though, like it did end up with Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson. There was a culture there in Seattle for a while that even with, you know, a variety of offensive coordinators, play callers, a lack of talent that surrounded Russell Wilson for certain stretches, they still had a culture that was able to be sustained there in Seattle for a while. It eventually fizzled, and Russ wanted out, and they moved on, and now he's in Denver. We'll see if he can establish a culture there with the Broncos. But, yes, the term culture, while it can be overused, it does have a level of importance, probably a level of importance in football that probably goes beyond its importance in any other sport, because the level of cohesion and coordination that's necessary for success in football goes beyond what's necessary for that level of success in any other sport. Like, you got to have a group that's in concert to really be effective in football. Now, it can happen in a one-off sort of way. Like, you know, maybe you get that brief window of time with the Rams when Kurt Warner was there and all the success that they had with the greatest show on turf for a very short period of time, or with this LA Rams Super Bowl that just happened, you know, a couple of seasons ago. But you think about what's happening in Kansas City right now. Like, they not only have the quarterback, but they also have the coach. And so there is a chemistry between quarterback, tight end, head coach slash play caller that seems like it's going to be sustained with the Chiefs for as long as they've got that core in place?
I asked the question, Ant, because, you know, what Eberflus and Ryan Poles were able to do that very first season, right? Evaluate, clean house, bring in some of their guys. And then you hear how the culture changed. The practices are run different. You know, Eberflus is a different dude. And I just, I'm always curious if that's sustainable, one, or if two, it is a culture that is trying to be instilled with a new team. Does that make sense? Like, you're trying to change a culture because it's a new team, so you need everybody to operate at a certain level in a certain way. It might not be what the end result will be, but, like, in a, for lack of better phrases, like, we got to whip these guys into shape and have everybody acting right. But that might not be the culture. That's just maybe the approach they had to take in order to get the team to be firing on all cylinders, or, like you said, to have them in concert so that that way you can then, you know, pivot to a different culture of once it's identified. You know what I'm saying? Like, does that make sense? I'm fascinated by the culture aspect of the Bears specifically, because I'm curious if it's going to be one that's going to be the same with this current group, or if it's one that is needed in order to propel yourself to the next one.
Well, they're in the infancy of establishing it. And so I think for, you know, you think about the Jalen Carter draft pick, you know, and they could have taken him at number 9 there in the top 10. All the discussion that we had had for weeks leading into that period of time when, you know, we thought that there was a chance that the Bears are going to have a chance at him. They were going to have an opportunity to draft Jalen Carter, but would they be willing to do it? And a part of that concern was because you wonder if a player who seemed to obviously lack a level of maturity for everything we saw Jalen Carter experience going into the NFL draft, are the Bears in a position where they have a culture that's established enough, if they have veterans who are established enough to be able to nurture Jalen Carter, to keep him in line, to help urge him on, to be an example for him, all these different things that, you know, can try to have a player with a troubled past be able to step into to what you've built and grow from it and be better than what he's been off the field, not just on the field, but off the field, but frankly, both. You know, we were talking earlier about Brandon Miller, the immaturity that's shown there. And in the NBA, you can still find greatness within that, even if a player is going to show a lot of immaturity off the court, because the culture isn't as necessary for success in hoops as it is in football. Football, there's so many bodies, so many personalities, so much coordination that's necessary and choreography that's involved, where you do need guys to be on the same page, not just in their physical execution, but it takes so much of you to prepare for these games and for success that the culture that's established is far more important in football. It takes up a bigger percentage of what leads to success in football than it does in any other sport.
And it makes so much sense when you say it like that. You know, it's just a bigger group of guys.
Yeah.
And whether it's football or just, you know, school, whenever you have that many people that you have to kind of orchestrate, it's a difficult thing to do, especially if you're trying to get them to buy into a particular type of culture. We will continue to discuss the culture and the players of the Chicago Bears in the 9 o'clock hour. But at the top of the hour, we get a chance to reconnect with the dynamic duo, Mark Grody, Alyssa Bergamini.
They better have a hoops team. I know that.
They better have shot a layup. Because if not, what else are we doing there?
What are they doing?
What are we doing?
What else are they doing out there if they are not drafting a hoops team and shooting layups as we speak?
Well, the Lakers have about a minute left on their clock before they make their pick. So who knows? Maybe AK is making some magic happen. We'll talk to Alyssa Bergamini, Mark Grody on the other side to find out the latest from the Advocate Center. It's Gabe Ramirez. It's Anthony Herron. It's Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.